our Russian thumbs again on the American election scales?
First for Donald Trump, now maybe also for Bernie Sanders. Reports say U.S. officials briefed Senator Sanders that Russia is trying to aid his campaign.
I'm Lulu Garcia-Navarro.
And I'm Scott Simon. And this is Up First from NPR News. Here's what Senator Sanders said last night to questions about Russian interference to benefit his campaign.
Mr. Putin is a thug. He is an autocrat. He may be a friend of Donald Trump's. He's not a friend of mine.
Also, growing worries in South Korea about COVID-19 and the coronavirus that causes it.
And votes cast and being counted in Iran. Parliamentary elections happened there after months of turmoil. Many voters stayed home in protest. So stay with us. We'll give you the news you need to start your day.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from BetterHelp, online counseling by licensed professional counselors specializing in issues including depression, stress, and anxiety. Visit BetterHelp.com/upfirst to learn more and get 10% off your first month.
There are new signs that Russia may be intensifying its efforts to disrupt the 2020 presidential elections. Bernie Sanders was briefed by U.S. officials on Russian attempts to help him in the Democratic primary, which he says he doesn't want.
Last week, intelligence officials told House lawmakers that Russia wants to help President Trump get reelected. At a campaign rally in Las Vegas yesterday, Trump once again blamed Democrats.
It's disinformation. That's the only thing they're good at. They're not good at anything else. They get nothing done. Do nothing, Democrats.
We're joined by NPR's Pam Fessler, who covers election security. Pam, thanks so much for being with us.
Good morning.
Quick fact check first. Is what the president said true?
Now, I mean, this information comes from his own intelligence officials, and they widely agree that Russia is trying to interfere in the elections and that they seem to have a preference for Trump.
Now, to be explicit here, we don't know what Russia may be doing to try and boost Bernie Sanders. We don't know what the intelligence looks like. There does seem to be a lot of confusion.
Exactly, which of course is what Russia's main goal is, to create confusion with our elections. Sanders confirmed yesterday that intelligence officials told him a month ago that Russia was trying to help his campaign. And that's something that the Mueller investigation found. They also did in 2016 in an effort to stop Hillary Clinton from getting elected. Sanders responded by saying that Russia should stay out of U.S. elections. He also took a stab at President Trump, saying that, quote, Russians want to undermine American democracy by dividing us up. And unlike the current president, I stand firmly against these efforts. And that was likely a reference to President Trump's response to news this week that House lawmakers were told that Russia is trying to get him reelected, something that's angered the president, who doesn't want people to think he's in his job because of Russia. And he dismissed it as a hoax. And after the briefing, he replaced his acting director of national intelligence with another acting director.
And of course, this report comes out as today we have Democratic voters going to caucus in Nevada. Is there concern that this could shake their confidence in the process?
Well, it definitely doesn't help. I mean, as you know, voters were already nervous because of the meltdown in the Iowa caucuses when this reporting app that they use failed. And we have to see how things are going to go in Nevada. But just broadly, polls that we've done here at NPR and other polls have shown that voters are very worried about the accuracy of these elections and about foreign efforts to interfere. And these new intelligence reports are disturbing, but also the response is pretty disturbing. Sanders yesterday seemed to question why this news about Russians helping him leaked the day before the primaries in which he leads, these caucuses. And then Trump yesterday accused other Democrats of doing it to hurt Sanders' chances of getting the nomination.
From what you've learned, Pam, what kind of threats are intelligence officials most worried about?
Well, the biggest thing is disinformation campaigns, the kind of things we saw in 2016, and they actually really haven't stopped. And that was the main focus of that House intelligence briefing, that they expect that Russia, as well as others, are going to try to take advantage of our political divisions and amplify them and basically try and goad Americans into fighting with each other more than we already are. And they're also watching out for, you know, possible attacks on the voting process itself, efforts to hack into voting systems or registration databases, or maybe even things like ransomware attacks that might disrupt voting. I think actually the biggest concern is that they're worried that Russians or the Iranians or some other, maybe even a domestic actor, is just going to not actually change votes, but make people believe that they can, and that that will undermine confidence just enough so that people will question the legitimacy of the results. And I think we're starting, quite frankly, to see some of that right now with all these reports.
NPR's Pam Fessler, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And for more of our election coverage, be sure to check out the NPR Politics podcast.
China has the most coronavirus cases in the world, and now South Korea is second. Today it recorded its biggest daily increase so far. There are 433 cases.
Around half of those are tied to one obscure church group, which authorities are now investigating as they try to prevent more infections.
NPR's Anthony Kuhn joins us now from Seoul. Anthony, thanks so much for being with us.
Sure, Scott.
What's going on with this outbreak?
Well, the epicenter of the outbreak is now Daegu, which is South Korea's fourth largest city. The streets there are pretty much deserted. The government has told 2.5 million residents there to stay at home, and they're doing it. Meanwhile, Daegu's hospitals are hard-pressed for medical equipment, doctors, and drugs, and so the central government is sending them. Then there's a county hospital outside Daegu, which has about a quarter of the country's cases. South Korea saw its third fatality from the virus today, which has continued to spread to other cities and provinces. And it's about the fourth day in a row that cases have doubled, and that has people here very jittery.
And Anthony, please tell us about this church that seems to be at the center of the outbreak. It's considered controversial.
Yes, it's called the Shincheonji Church of Jesus. Shincheonji means new heaven and earth, and it was founded in the 1980s by a charismatic pastor named Iman Hee, and his followers believe that he is the Messiah. Some people call this a religious movement. Critics call it a cult. It has a reputation for proselytizing very aggressively, handing out flyers on the street, and according to other churches, infiltrating their congregations and poaching their members. And the members of Shincheonji reportedly ignore this virus because they see it as a trick of the devil to obstruct them from spreading their religion. So dozens of the church have been shut down around the country, and about some 1,200 members have reported that they have symptoms of the virus, and so 9,300 church members have been self-quarantined.
Are authorities making any progress in understanding how the virus is spread?
Well, what they're trying to do is track down everyone who got into contact with this church or hospital and isolating them before they can spread the virus further. And that requires a lot of detective work, going through surveillance camera tape, going through credit card transaction records. This church reportedly has members in China. They're trying to see if any transmission occurred there. And they're also exploring links between the two big nodes of the virus, the church and the hospital. For example, church members attended the church founder's brother's funeral at the hospital, but no explicit links have been established yet.
Anthony, does the South Korean government seem to have a hold on this situation?
Well, that's what everyone is concerned about. The South Korean government and the World Health Organization say that despite this explosion in case numbers, the total number is still manageable. Authorities are now shifting their tactics from trying to prevent the virus from entering the country to prevent it from spreading among different communities. The concern, the fear, is that the government can't track down all the spreaders. These numbers are just going to continue to explode. Daegu and Seoul have been fairly empty and quiet, but the country is not really going into lockdown the way China has. But the fear is that if they don't get a grip, then more draconian measures will be needed.
NPR's Anthony Kuhn speaking to us from Seoul. Thanks so much.
You're welcome, Scott.
There have been months of upheaval in Iran, tensions with the U.S., an airliner shot down by Iran's own forces, and the public outrage that followed, and protests by Iranians over their country's deteriorating economy.
And just yesterday, elections that appear to have been designed to put hardliners squarely in charge of the parliament.
NPR's Peter Kenyon is in Tehran, and he joins us now. Good morning.
Hi, Lulu.
We said the election favors hardliners. How did that develop, and does it seem like all the events of the last few months were a factor?
Well, there's a definite advantage, and here's how it worked. There's this group called the Guardian Council. Their job is to vet the candidates, say who can run and who can't, and this time they chose to knock 7,000 candidates off the ballot. Mm. That's around the whole country, not just here in Tehran. And the Iranian media say most of those knocked out were moderate or reform candidates, so the challenge against hardline candidates all but disappeared before the polls even opened. And this is is coming after some very hard times for Iranian people. You remember they took to the streets last fall protesting price hikes, violent crushing of those dissenting protesters. Iranians I've spoken with, they don't go out of their way to connect those hard times in the November protests with these elections. However, there is bound to be an effect, and it seems that the powers that be want hardliners to have every possible advantage.
What are the issues that people are talking about, since you're saying you're out there talking to Iranians on the streets?
Well, economy comes up over and again, as you can imagine. Sanctions after President Trump walked away from the nuclear agreement and have taken a toll. Everybody agrees that those sanctions, combined with Iranian mismanagement, are making daily life very difficult. I met 68-year-old Mohammad Turkoman just after he had cast his vote in these parliamentary races. He told me he voted for candidates who said they favor talking with the rest of the world, negotiating with other countries to achieve Iran's goals, and he specifically said he hopes relations with the U.S. will improve, because that would not only help the Iranian people, but be good for calming the region, making things more peaceful. Now, that's one opinion. Obviously, other people say they want the government to keep fighting the American enemy as hard as ever, but it gives you a sense of the kind of debate here among a people that's suffering and wants their government to do something about it.
In addition to these economic pressures, we hear that Iranian officials are now saying that there might be cases of the coronavirus in all major cities there. Are people worried?
Oh, yeah. This is the topic of the moment. I visited several pharmacies today in Tehran. The crowds kept getting bigger and bigger. The first three were completely out of medical masks and gloves. Remember, Iran has long complained that sanctions are making it hard to get medicine and medical supplies, even though technically they're not under the sanctions. Four reported deaths so far. Experts say the good reason to suspect many more cases of infection that have been reported. Officials have told the media it'd be prudent to assume the virus is in every major city. They say all measures are going to be taken, but this is a fluid situation, and obviously Iran is scrambling to try and deal with the virus.
That's NPR's Peter Kenyon in Tehran. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Lulu.
And that's Up First for Saturday, February 22nd, 2020. I'm Scott Simon.
And I'm Lulu Garcia-Navarro. Up First is back Monday with news to start your day. And follow us on social media. We're at Up First on Twitter.
And of course, you know the news doesn't stop when this podcast ends. We've got a solution for that.
It's called Weekend Edition, Saturday and Sunday. Find your NPR station at stations.npr.org.
Astrology is as old as civilization itself, and today it's easier to access than ever before thanks to the internet and smartphones.
This week on Throughline, how astrology almost went extinct and made a remarkable comeback.
Throughline from NPR, the podcast where we go back in time
to understand the present.